Thanks for coming back, everyone. Today's episode is probably on our most requested movie ever.
Yeah, really, though.
We are finally discussing the movie adaptation of Stephenie Meyer's genre-defining novel, Twilight.
Yeah.
Pause for intense cheering. as always, you don't have to watch the movie in order to listen to the episode, but we always recommend it as we will never stray away from spoilers. But really, I mean, like, what spoilers are there? Edward's a vampire.
Right.
Bella almost gets eaten. Plot twist. That's it. So, I don't know. Let's just get rolling. I'm your host, Audrey.
And I'm your co-host, Cherie.
So sit back, relax, and please don't silence your phone while we check your cinematic pulse.
Twilight. But only this one.
But only, we're going to try to restrict our conversation.
Oh, no, I mean, I only like
analysis.
This one.
Yeah. Yeah.
No sniffling like that. You better keep
those
sniffles
in your
face.
I'm sorry, but the sniffling was me holding in my rage.
You shouldn't have that much rage for this film.
It blossomed
all over
again. You can
have rage for the other films, but this one, I would like to argue my points on why it's not as bad as people think it is.
I will gladly listen to your arguments as a true friend and centrist. I will listen to your opinion.
I got you.
Okay, quick summary. For those of you who haven't watched the movie in a while or read the book in a while, when 17-year-old Bella Swan leaves Phoenix to live with her father in Forks, Washington, she meets an exquisitely handsome boy at school for whom she feels an overwhelming attraction and who she comes to realize is not wholly human.
Beautiful.
That's directly from the inside cover of my Twilight book. I can't take credit for that. Yeah. Exquisite would be Stephanie's word, not mine. Thanks, Steph. Not our Stephanie. Miss Meyer.
Yes, the writer.
It's Miss Meyer to you.
My bad, Miss Meyer.
Cherie?
Yeah.
What were your first impressions on this movie?
How old was I when this film came out? When did this come out?
This movie came out in 2008.
How old was I in 2008? 16?
So you would have been ninth grade.
Yeah. I was 16. I liked it because I
didn't
know.
You would have been 16 in ninth grade.
Ninth? Tenth? Yeah.
You'd have been 15.
15. Yes, 15. Mm-hmm. Yep, correct. I liked it because I was part of the frenzy that was the rage of the books.
Had you read the book before you watched the movie?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I did read the book before I watched the movie because I remember going into junior year and the last book, I think, had come out. So I definitely would have read all the books, I think, up until that point. I never finished the last book for reasons we'll get to later. Much later.
But you never finished the last book?
Absolutely not. I got halfway through it and put it down and never picked it back up. I was so unimpressed.
Do you not like pregnancy tropes?
No, that's not it. I was just bored. It was boring me.
No. What? Okay.
Right, yeah, well. It was boring me. But yeah, I like the first book, but I also really like origin stories. So I think that's one of the reasons I love the book. Mostly just that book. I can't say I really like any of the other ones. But the movie, as far as movie impressions go, I absolutely loved it because I was part of that, oh, Team Edward frenzy. As an adult, I'm not sure if I'm as Team Edward as I used to be. But I enjoyed the book as a 16-year-old who didn't really understand films at that point. 15, 16,
well,
whatever my age was.
I can respect that.
I loved the music. I can tell you that. That's something I will never forget as long.
I have comments on
films.
Music, for sure. For sure. Because I'll... Okay.
I'm going to ask you to rein it in a lot today. I already know
I'm just going to say, like, let me put my thoughts in order. Let me try to compose myself and conduct myself like a professional, like a mm-hmm. professional podcast hoster here.
You can have rage, but let it be simmering.
I will have simmering rage the whole episode. My first impressions, I literally just have written terrible, horrible, nothing like the book. Why is everything blue?
Terrible, horrible. Okay. What are the things that make it terrible? Are we talking about the book or the movie?
The movie.
Okay, continue.
The movie. Okay, so I remember going to this. I was dating a guy at the time. My whole class and my boyfriend's whole class had read the books. We were all totally gung-ho on this teen romance. Like, we loved this series. It was honestly accessible for guys. A lot of my guy friends read these books before the movies came out. It was not cringe to be a fan of Twilight, because there was action and fighting, and you had like a cool, you know, stoic hero. Oh yeah, there's action and fighting. The whole end fight scene with James and everything.
Oh, like, okay. We're talking about that. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yes, continue. I actually really liked the story. I think the plot and the pacing was really good. And I'll say all those reasons why later, but yes, continue.
Yeah. So to say nothing of the gender bent version Life and Death, which I'm also a huge fan of, which also
I forgot about that one.
Every guy that I've ever talked to that, like, I pitched that plot context to them. I, like, explained the plot of Life and Death with a male main character, and they're like, I get it now. It all makes sense. And I'm like, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway,
first impression.
We were all huge fans of the book series, and so, like, me and a bunch of my friends, and specifically that boyfriend at the time who was also a huge fan of the book series, went to go see the movie. We're super excited. We were super excited to see our favorite characters were Alice and Jasper, and so I was super excited to see, like, the character that I identified the most with, because I also in high school was a small pixie of a human with short hair. So I was like, yes, I'm Alice. I want to go see my hero portrayed on screen, and I just was let down.
No, so continue. Bad.
I'm sorry.
I'm laughing at you saying I needed to see my hero Alice.
Alice is my favorite character, and they did not do her character justice, and I'm so mad.
Okay.
So anyway, the opening of the movie isn't really that terrible. Billy Burke, it, like, steals the screen for me, even before, like, he's like the craze about character. Everyone thinking he's beautiful, but, like,
Billy
even
Burke,
before all of that, Billy Burke is probably the best cast person in this entire series as Charlie.
I would say second best cast. I don't care what anyone says about this. Jacob.
Who's your first?
I actually think Jacob was
second best
great.
Cast. Taylor Lautner. Fantastic. I fully agree with you.
Again, things I will say later about this film. He is great. I love Jacob. Throughout the series, Jacob has so much soul and heart, and I think Taylor Lautner did an amazing job as Jacob. I don't know if anyone else could have played him.
Yes, I completely agree. For a kid who had no history in acting, when he got into acting, he was one of the most organic-feeling actors. Him and Billy Burke, both, were the most organic-feeling actors in this whole movie. Mm-hmm. I 1,000% agree with you. Best casting were Charlie and Jacob.
Yep.
So the beginning of this movie is not terrible. I'm like, okay, I can see they took a little bit of artistic license. Not too sure about, like, the opening in Arizona and then her getting on the plane. Like, that's fine, but, like, the lighting was weird. Like, it's Arizona and everything was already gray. They put their LUT on it. It was really odd. Because it is a LUT, right? I'm assuming it's a LUT because I've seen shots without...
All the blue shots, definitely going to be LUTs. I do feel like there are LUTs on this film at different points, but not at all points.
Which, refresher for our listeners, what's a LUT?
A LUT is basically a created film you put over a shot. There are several directors who immediately... They'll make a LUT before they even start filming a movie because they know how they want it to look. This film, so, like, especially, as
Michael
you said,
Bay.
The blue.
Yeah, the blue. Yeah, okay. I was going to say, like, for instance, like, Michael Bay and how everyone's eyes are, like, that iridescent lightning blue in all of
it's
Michael
weird.
Bay's movies. Yeah, like, think Transformers and how Megan Fox's eyes are, like, the color of Pluto. Yeah. Did you hear about Pluto? That's messed up. And I was trying to think of another really good LUT example. Like early seasons of Supernatural, how everything is like washed out, also a LUT.
Potentially. So, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Anyway.
If I'm wrong, don't quote me.
Same.
So anyway, intro, like, okay, they took maybe some creative license, but I'm still, like, I'm on board. And then, like, it just, the second that Billy Black and Jacob roll up to the Swan's house to give Bella the truck, which is not like the book, but also, like, it's fine. They're just introducing Jacob's character earlier. So, like, he'll have him be there for the, you know, giving of the truck. That's fine. Not like the book, but the issue is, like, from that moment, the interaction just gets super awkward.
Yeah, because they're awkward teenagers.
Yes, but you can portray awkward teenagers without awkward acting. There are two, like, because there's plenty of teenage movies. Do you think both of their acting is bad? Yes.
In that scene?
No, yes and no. Yes, yes. Actually, I do. Taylor does not do a great job in that scene. He warms into his character, and I'm pretty sure this was shot chronologically. Don't quote me on that. But he warms into his character later on, and becomes better. But he is supposed to be a little bit awkward, but it's too awkward. It's too awkward in this scene. Kristen also is a very awkward Bella. Bella is not this awkward in the books. She's awkward, sure, but she's eloquent, and she's not eloquent in the movie. Bella in the book is a huge English buff. Like, she loves classic literature. She's very well read and she's very articulate. And she was not that in this movie. Part of that is Kristen Stewart's acting style. I stand behind. I don't think she was the right cast for this movie.
I agree. I agree on that. I don't hate her in all parts of the film. I don't hate her at all. Was she
no,
not
I don't
fit specifically
hate her acting.
For her? No, not really. But
I just
here's
can't
the thing,
stand her acting at certain points in this movie.
I could say that for both her and Robert Pattinson, but
I agree.
Here's the thing, because I have to disconnect my love for Kristen Stewart, the actress, versus Kristen Stewart as Bella, because I do like the oddness and the quirkiness of her acting, because she is showcasing a lot of herself in her characters.
Yes.
And
yeah,
that works
she,
for some
I think,
people,
went
like
a little
Taylor
too
Lautner.
Method.
It works well for someone like Taylor Lautner, where you can feel his soul in his character.
Yeah,
that's
he
not
can be
always
himself.
Good. That's not always good for every character. And I think that is one of the big issues with people in not liking Kristen Stewart as Bella, because she feels too gloomy. And even though
agreed.
Bella's not my favorite literary character by any means, I actually at least liked her in the first book. And that's about it. I love Kristen Stewart as a person and as an actress. I just did not... I will agree with everyone on the she was not well cast for this role.
Mm-mm.
And that goes for Robert Pattinson as well. The funny thing is I feel a lot, like both of them, almost too method, almost too gloomy,
yes.
almost too sad. And he's very stony at times. You see a lot of his, I'm going to be Batman in like 10 years.
Yes! My guy is just freaking Bruce Wayne later on in the Batman. That's
excuse
just
me,
20 the whole...
years. Man, it feels weird.
Oh,
almost 20
Lord
years.
Lord almighty. Yeah, 15 years. Yeah. Yeah, so I think my overall problem, because I think I was able to boil it down when I was thinking about this again. My overall problem with this movie, and I remember this was my problem back in 2008 when it came out, is this movie focused way too much on action and intrigue and not nearly enough on romance. Bella and Edward's interactions are so awkward, stilted, and forced, despite Kristen and Rob having been cast for their natural chemistry. Not their on-screen chemistry, by the way. Their natural chemistry.
Right. Very big difference.
Very big difference. On-screen chemistry is all acting. Real-life chemistry does not translate to screen. I promise you this. It does not. Yeah, you have to... There is a display about it if you want your natural chemistry to translate to screen, because you need... It's a whole discussion on acting we can have another time. But
right. This
story is supposed to be about the blind passion and trust of first love. Those aren't my words. That's Stephenie Meyer. That's what the story is supposed to be about, and I don't get that from this movie.
And this is where I'm going to come in and say, I rarely feel that for teen romance films. Like, when we talked about Warm Bodies the other day, or a few weeks ago, I was like, mm-hmm. I'm not convinced. It's cute, and they fall in love over the course of a couple days. At least for this film, you got about six-ish weeks, 2 to 2 months of them falling in love. That being said, mm-hmm. this is one of those things where Twilight might translate better as a series versus a movie, because mm-hmm. you actually will finally see those moments. It's like read the book, you know? It's over a course of time where... And, okay, I'm putting too many thoughts all at once. Let me finish one thought.
This is what I'm talking about. I'm like, I gotta, like, reorganize my brain if I'm gonna have a coherent discussion with you for this episode.
But so, like, I feel like romances don't translate very well in teen films because a lot of the times it is about falling in love for the first time. And I think if it's just a true teen romance where it's, like, based in high school and high school stuff, that's whatever. But this is also a sci-fi book, so we have to build the romance on top of the intrigue of not knowing who Edward really is, and then also getting to the action-y parts of the story in the book. So mm-hmm. you try and put
together. Don't come in until the very, very, very end. It's not the point of this book. The point of this book is the romance. This was the pillar, the cornerstone of the genre of paranormal romance. It became a genre after this. When I said genre defining in the intro, I meant it. Like, it was.
Yeah, you're then, not wrong.
It was then a placard you could see at Barnes & Noble was paranormal romance, and there was a whole section devoted to it.
Look at the books we're reading nowadays. I can't imagine why we started reading them.
It's the exact same thing that Sarah J. Maas did with A Court of Thorns and Roses. It became romantasy. Fantasy romance.
That's a great word.
Mm-hmm, romantasy. It has become its own subgenre that has its own cornerstone, which I personally want to attribute it to Sarah J. Maas, who made it more mainstream to have.
I would say she didn't start it, but I think it became mainstream with the ACOTAR series.
Uh-huh.
I could be wrong. I'm not as much of a book girly as other girls. I do like to read.
I still haven't read it. Really... It's on my TBR. I'm still working through Scarlet St. Clair and A Touch of Darkness. I'm still working through that mm-hmm. series. I'm getting ready to finish it. Who? Complete side note, I got the pleasure to meet a couple of weeks ago, and she's an absolute angel.
You looked so good in your outfit.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
But anyway, back to
I digress. Yeah. I have a lot of notes on casting for this. Because I'm gonna make you simmer down
to the most important castings.
I know. I think you and I are in agreement on this, that the casting decisions fell flat. They went a little bit too method, I think, with finding people who had good real life chemistry. Because mm-hmm. Kristen and Rob did date for a while during this series. And I just don't think that they were what we deserved for these characters. We deserved characters and actors who were a lot more emotive. And I have, honestly, you know the series Vampire Diaries?
Yeah, and I know I'm one of those people who's never watched it. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I didn't get into that series until I was in college, I think. I needed something to watch and got into it. But Nina Dobrev, the main character in that series, actually auditioned to be Bella. She loved the Twilight series and tried out for Bella. And I personally think that she would have made a way better Bella.
I think a lot of people honestly would have done a better Bella. Who would you have cast? Oh, at that age? I don't know. I really don't know because that's so long ago. Oh my God, I can't believe I said mm-hmm. that. But... Kristen
I know,
Stewart
that's the
again.
Thing. I was like, who would I have cast back in 2008 in this role? I know who I could cast now, but who in 2008 would have been better?
Right. I think it's Kristen and Rob's acting style that they have specific acting. They're both method. I think you have mm-hmm. to be a little more loosey-goosey with it, if you will. I think you really got to
be more impressionable with your acting.
Yeah, I don't think that method was right, and not only mm-mm. method, but Kristen Stewart again has a lot of herself in her acting.
It doesn't fly for this movie.
She can be method, like she played Princess Diana, wonderful, loved it. But mm-hmm. I think in a lot of her films where she's not playing a real life human being who existed,
Right, she, something to go off of.
You always have a little bit of her in there, and that's not necessarily bad. It's quirky, but it you have to, sometimes I feel like you really have to remove yourself from characters to be that character. And I could feel at times, yeah. I could feel at times, very few, less Robert Pattinson and more Edward in his roles, but it's still so...
It was very
Shakespearean and dramatic, and I was like, man, these are teenagers. But then again, I have to tell myself, he's 100-something years old.
Yeah, but I still didn't get that. He's also not very eloquent. And he's, for me, Rob was just too brooding.
Oh, yeah. He's Batman through and through in this film.
Yes. And Edward's emotions are supposed to be all over the place. He's supposed to feel all of them with force. And Rob is really only able to do brooding super, super well. And I feel like just the other emotions don't look genuine on him. That they're fleeting. I know from reading some behind the scenes stuff years ago that I guess the directors did feel that way. And they told him, like, hey, we need you to, like, be more expressive. We need you to smile more for this role. And they, like, circled all the spots where in the script where Edward is, like, supposed to smile or, like, Edward smirks and stuff like that. And Robert Pattinson actually turned around and gave the script back to them, having highlighted all the points where it said Edward frowned, Edward scowled, Edward's eyes darkened, like all the negative things, and just handed it back to them. We're like, no, look at all these brooding things that he does. That's how I'm going to act the part. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about being method. That's where he took this character, and he couldn't be directed to do otherwise. That's probably got to listen to your directors, because they're seeing what's going to play on screen.
Why I don't like his acting for the character later. I mean, a lot of that goes with, oh man, I know I've talked about this 1,000 times with you, but never on the podcast. Directors are so important.
So important.
And 95% of the reason I give this movie a pass, I would even say a B-, is because of the director, Katherine Hardwicke. I feel her soul in this film. I do not feel it with any of the other directors throughout the series. And when she wasn't directing the second one, I was pissed. I was fuming. Because I loved it. Again, this movie's choppy. It has moments. Yeah. Like, even some of her directorial choices jumpy. With camera work. Weird. But you know what? When I watch this film, I try to look at it more as an indie film and less of a franchise film. And that's honestly one of the reasons I like it so much, is because I feel it is so different from the, how many are in this? 5, 4?
What?
This film series. 1, 2, 3.
5.
5.
Yeah. 5.
I separate this,
there's 4
film.
Books, the last one's 2.
Yes. I separate this movie completely from the other ones because I feel like there's at least some soul in the way this movie is directed. And I don't feel that with the other 4. It's the reason this is the only of the 5 films I will actually rewatch still today without someone telling me. We're doing a podcast on it and we're going to watch it.
We're going to watch the rest of them. You're like, fine, I'll force my way through Eclipse.
But I, for Bella's character specifically, I like her in this film. Let's go back to... Let's go back to casting and we'll jump to characters later.
I was going to say, I got to pare down all my stuff on casting because, like, I have recast this whole movie in my head.
I've never recast them. I don't think I could. That'd be too much work.
I have spent so much time thinking about it, like thinking about who in 2008 would have been a better casting choice for most of these characters. I will say, like we talked about.
Imagine RDJ as Charlie.
Stop. Would have still worked, but not been as, it would have been a different movie.
Imagine Scarlett Johansson.
I was thinking about that. I was actually thinking about ScarJo as Esme.
Oh, I was thinking of her as Victoria.
Would have been okay, but I actually...
I hated that Victoria got recast later, as much as I love Bryce Dallas Howard.
Hate that it's Bryce Dallas Howard. I love Bryce Dallas Howard, but she should not have recast Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway.
we digress.
The best cast characters in this movie, I feel like, were the side characters.
Yeah.
Because we'd already talked about Charlie and Jacob. Billy Black was also decent. I honestly love who they cast as James. loved who they originally cast as Victoria. I loved Mike, who actually originally tried out to be
so
Edward.
Normal.
He felt like he was such so normal.
Normal guy. He felt like you felt like he was actually from Forks. Great cast.
Yes, my favorite scenes in the movie are the ones that are just like Bella with her friends, mm-hmm. like at the lunch table and at La Push Beach. Like, they're so organic and they feel so real, and they're the least stilted scenes in the whole movie. Those are my favorite parts of the movie. And Mike is a huge part of that because he's just so puppy-eyed and genuine, and he's exactly like his character in the book.
Oh my gosh! It's and then perfect. The antics in the high school, like
yes,
just any
like
of the
friends
high school
turn around,
antics.
Tyler coming around and like yanking Mike's chair out from under
and
him
kissing
when
Bella?
He's like trying
yes.
to flirt with Bella. Mm-hmm. Yes,
that actually felt like high
oh
school.
My gosh.
Those are great. Those
so
are greatly
real.
Directed.
Like, that was the only point where like, all right, I'll allow method acting because this is like watching a bunch of high schoolers and it's perfect. But I talked about Alice early on, and I love, what's her name, Ashley Green?
Mm-hmm.
I love her. I don't love her as Alice. She was not a good Alice.
I didn't mind her as Alice. I didn't think she did a terrible job.
Alice is, okay, the person I would have recast back then is this very little known actress, and I encourage you all to go look her up. Her name is Valerie Curry, C-U-R-R-Y, like the food. She actually does appear later on in the movie series in Breaking Dawn as Charlotte, one of the vampires who shows up to bear witness against the Volturi. She is in the series. She's cast in a very minor role, but she's what Alice should have been. She's the tiniest little pixie of a human being. She's so cute, and she has short little cropped hair, and that's how Alice was supposed to look and act. She was supposed to look like a teeny tiny little like graceful ballet dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just not the vibe that I got off of Ashley Green. I got like the fun, like perky vibe of like somebody who wanted to be Bella's best friend, but it just wasn't, it didn't feel genuine.
That honestly was forced. More important to me. Oh, really? I would disagree. That's one of them I'll disagree with you on, is I don't mind Ashley Green's portrayal of Alice. I thought she was fun. I think she was the friend that Bella needed. I actually like the way she uses her voice as Alice as well. I don't know why, but I actually liked Ashley Green. I didn't mind her. She's not my my favorite character, but I didn't mind Alice. I didn't mind Ashley Green as
didn't
Alice.
Didn't mind Alice. Good. I have so many notes. How the heck are we going to do this in an hour, Cherbert?
I'm going to ask you to limit it to three characters. The three you think are most important.
I'm skipping acting entirely. I just wanted to bring up who I would have recast as Alice because I just did not like that casting.
Can
up
we
front.
Say, let me say this though. Who did you think was well cast? We already said.
Well, like I said, our side
Jacob.
Characters. Mm-hmm. Our side characters. Carlisle has grown on me more as I've gotten older. Because watching him again, I'm like, okay, he's not a bad Carlisle. He's not bad. My problem with the casting for most of the Cullen family is I want to have a word with costuming and makeup. The whole department and I needed to have a sit down.
That is me in every film after the first one.
Yeah, every film after the first one. I will be interested to have our discussion on this then.
Now is
Carlisle
me later.
Carlisle is good. Emmett is also very good.
Emmett's fun.
Emmett is pretty much perfect. Emmett is fun. He's exactly like his character in the book. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's again some makeuping and costume things that I needed them to do differently to sell it, but overall they're good, and also all the people we've already mentioned. Yeah, just they didn't get their main characters right, and it just flopped the rest of the movie for me. What do I talk about next, Cher?
I can tell you the reasons why I like this film. You can tell me if I'm, well, you can't tell me if I'm wrong or right. You can't make me decide that.
You know, I did write down things that I thought the movie did
well. I was
going to
say, what are the
well.
Things you do like? Tell me. I want to see if we agree
on them. I did write down a few. I didn't get all the way through things that I could have written down if I'd had. I unfortunately did not give myself enough time to really do this. I'm sure we'll touch base on this again at some point. We should make this an annual thing. Or every time there's an eclipse, do a Twilight
episode.
Well,
we won't have another one for like 40 years or something. Maybe
what?
Longer.
No.
Oh,
okay, it doesn't have to be a total. It doesn't have to be a total solar eclipse. We can do like the next lunar one. It's fine.
Those happen like every year.
There you go then. Be an annual thing. Things the movie did well. The the actual action of the car crash scene, I had always had a hard time picturing the scene in the book. It's like just a paragraph of text explaining where everything is and how everything's moving. And I remember being a teenager and reading that paragraph like probably 10 times and trying to like draw out on a piece of paper where the cars could have been and just never being able to truly picture it in a way where Tyler's van. The car crash. I mean the van, the parking lot scene where Tyler almost hits Bella.
I'm like, what car crash? Okay, sorry, continue.
Car crash, loosely termed. Sorry. I was never really able to picture that accurately.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how is it gonna hit her twice? It like hits her truck once and then hit her twice, and I just could never picture that. So seeing the movie physically put that out and make that happen.
Are you telling me one of your favorite parts is the simplest of car crashes?
It's so crucial. It's so crucial because it's the beginning of their relationship, and I could never picture it. And so this movie just actually like made me be able to envision it. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm. thank God. And so now whenever I read the book, this is what I see. I see the movie parking lot crash scene. Which is insane because I'm not a fan of this movie. So for me to picture something from the movie when I'm reading the book means they did a good job.
Okay.
Other things the movie did well, James.
That's it?
James.
Tell me there's more. No.
James as a character.
He's great.
He is awesome. Mm-hmm. He is awesome. Whoever
he's the rugged. Person
that they cast for him is awesome. He is rugged. He looks like an Abercrombie model, but like whatever. Did the character of James and his sauntering confidence of a vampire who is a hunter.
He made him punchable to me. I was like, ooh, I hate you.
Like, dude gave me chills. Like,
but in a good way, I hate quoted, you.
Like, yeah, in the best way. In the best way. Like, in the, yeah, I would actually fear that guy kind of way. Not a corny way. Like, a yes, that guy could successfully hunt someone down.
I remember reading that part in the book where he catches her. And, you know, he's tricked her. I'm like, that son of a gun. And you almost praise him because you're like, you got me. Mm. I'm a little mad, but I'm a little impressed.
I'm sad that we didn't get how cunning Bella gets at the airport to get away from Alice and Jasper.
Mm-hmm.
She's thinking about how in the world is she going to get away from Alice and Jasper when she's at the airport because they're supposed to. Is this scene in the movie? Does she leave them at the airport?
No, she leaves them at a hotel.
So in the book, the rest of the Cullens are going to fly in to Jacksonville, or not to Jacksonville, to Phoenix.
Yeah.
And the rest of the Cullens are going to fly in, so they go to meet them all at the airport, Bella and Alice and Jasper do. And she's already gotten, like, the ransom call from James. And she's thinking, how am I going to lose a psychic who the second I make a decision to run is going to see it?
Mm-hmm.
So she's thinking about it. She's thinking about it. She's thinking about it. Obviously, Alice has seen that Bella's going to wind up in the ballet room at some point. But she hasn't seen how. And in the airport, Bella has this epiphany. She has to go to the bathroom and she remembers there are two exits to that bathroom. The one that she went into and one around the corner out of Jasper's sight.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that she'll have a split second to do it before Alice gets the vision and can communicate it to Jasper. And so she goes in, goes out the other exit and darts out the door and gets in a taxi before they're able to come after her. And it's so interesting the way that that's written and so cool the way she plays around Alice's powers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just bummed that we didn't get something that cool in the movie.
1,000%.
Because the second that Bella decided to do that, Alice would have seen it and Alice should have seen it. And they didn't put that in the movie.
Yep.
Talking about the movie, things the movie did good. This is minor, but actually helping me pronounce the word Quileute.
Because you were giving me nothing to speak on.
I thought, no, this is so funny because I
will also say, I had no idea how to say that. I didn't know either.
I was reading this, which is, it's a real Native American tribe. It's a real Indian tribe in Washington. I've been there. That's a whole other part of this episode. I've been here. I was pronouncing it like Kilute.
Mm-hmm.
Like the U was like a diphthong. I was pronouncing it Kilute, and it's not. It's Quileute.
They got so it I was saying right it right. Movie. Okay. Good.
Kudos to you, because I was saying it way wrong. Mine sounds cool, but it's not
maybe
right.
Maybe it's the Native American in me.
there you go, honoring your ancestors.
I'm not sure that I'm definitely not from that tribe, though.
No, probably not.
Anyway,
but yeah, we already talked about one of my favorite parts of the movie, but it's Bella with her friends we talked about, and the scenes with Bella and Jacob, that they always just felt so natural and organic, and not awkward. They're some of my favorite parts of the movie. They're parts that I really feel like they did well. They showed Bella as a normal teenager having normal conversations with normal friends. And I loved Angela. I loved the casting for, like, Angela and Jessica. Angela, I know you don't watch The Walking Dead, but Angela is Rosita from The Walking Dead.
Angela, only know because my brother was like, that's that girl from, like, some Nickelodeon or Disney show way back in the day. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
I don't remember what show it was, but yeah, she got her acting start real young. But yeah, we talked about the side characters are all cast super well. Anna Kendrick is Jessica, spot on. She is a perfect Jessica.
And
she's,
this
like,
was
fake,
her
bouncy and a backstabby best friend. Like,
wasn't this her breakout role?
I'm pretty sure this was her breakout role.
This
she
and
got
Ashley
perfect
Green,
after this.
Both, these were their breakout roles. It worked out well for Anna Kendrick, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what Jackson Rathbone's doing right now. Jasper, he wound up getting cast as Sokka in the M. Night Shyamalan Avatar The Last Airbender. That was unfortunate for him. It's an unfortunate career move.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are my things that I liked about this movie.
Oh, man, that hurts me a little bit. But only slightly. I mean, I already said it. 95% of the reason I like this film is the director. I really, 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 really love the way she uses cameras in this film.
Okay, please enlighten me, because this is not something that I'm able to pay attention to when I watch this movie, because nine
you're
times out
never
of ten, I'm watching through my fingers because I want to vomit.
Thing. It's so prominent throughout this film that I'm like, she has so many sweeping shots, and she just moves the camera on, like, she's got to be moving it on a jib.
Sweeping shots, like, when, like, Bella's just, like, driving into the high school parking lot, and it sweeps, like, from the road into the parking lot to show all the cars in the high school?
That's boring. No.
Okay. But, I mean, like, is that what you're talking about when you say
sweeping
shot? Give me a for instance.
She does a lot of interesting things. And I don't know if everyone likes it. Maybe it's me. Because, again, I see this more as an indie film and more experimental. But I feel like she is more experimental with her camera work in this film. So a really good example is Bella and Edward are up in the mountains. And she's like, tell me what I am. What am I? And she's like, you're a vampire. Get over it. I'm speaking. Ma'am?
That's so bad.
Hush your mouth.
Continue.
Anyway.
Okay.
There are different parts in that scene, however long it is, 10 or so minutes, maybe less. But there are times where you'll have a close-up of Bella, and then you'll have this, like, shot that's got to be, it's got to be on a jib where it kind of moves almost in a smiley face type of, like, movement. Or the opposite, like a frowny face, like it's doing these arcs. I don't know why.
Interesting, okay.
And then it'll be, like, Edward's face, and you have these movements again, these big sweeping movements with the camera. They are weird. They are odd. But honestly, I love them because I feel like the whole thing is already odd. You're living in a world where vampires and later, oh gosh, werewolves are living. You're living in this sci-fi magical world. And I honestly love the weird movements of the camera. It makes it feel odd. It makes it feel ethereal. And I'm trying to think of, like, how often I ever see camera work like that. And it's not often. And it's why I love Catherine Hardwicke so much in this film, because I feel like I can feel her soul in this film, her directorial choices. Mm-hmm. It makes Forks and the whole story for me feel a little more intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why I don't like the films after, because I don't feel the soul of that first one. You can say whatever you want about the acting, the writing. Are they great? Not always. But I always loved that I felt like there was a little bit of heart in there and a little bit of soul in there where you might not have found all the best things about this film. But I feel like that the director really, really, really cared about this film. And I felt it. I feel in the way she mm-hmm. really put effort towards how she directed the film, whether it be through how she might have directed her. Because I feel like she tried really hard to pull the romance out of this film. It's unfortunate that you don't always see it with the actors, but I feel like she at least tried to pull it out and tried mm-hmm. to make it.
Most of the initial scenes between Edward and Bella. We did get them. They just weren't acted well.
They just didn't land, unfortunately. Yeah. They didn't just land the right way. But it's something I will always regret, is I feel like I might have liked the story, the movie specifically. I can't say I loved all the stories. I read most of them. But I feel like I might have enjoyed the movies going forward after this one a little more had she directed all of them. Because I just really enjoyed how she made Forks feel with her directing. I like how I like how she made me feel watching the characters, even though I couldn't always relate to the acting.
Mm-hmm. I think that intrigue that you're talking about, like that sense of like ethereal mystery almost, I think that's a good like vibe to describe this movie with. And I think that's why I didn't like it, was because there was too much intrigue and not enough romance. Like there was too much mystery and not enough passion.
I think that's the issue though, is like first they only had 2 months to fall in love before the book ended, because she comes in middle of March, right? To the school year. Yeah. That's what she says in the movie.
Mm-hmm. She says that in the movie. I don't think that's when she came in the books. I think she actually comes in November in the book.
Either way. But the thing is, I think you're right. I think she does come sooner. My issue a lot of the times is I don't connect with romance films hardly ever anyway. So I often am trying to find other things I like about a film, because romance is not one I love, because I feel like it's so hard to make, I said it earlier, it's so hard to make romance feel real in such a short time. Granted, you can do things like 50 First Dates, where you fall in love over and over and over again, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or,
I mean, it is teen romance, though, and it is, so the emotions are going to be heightened, and they're supposed to be heightened,
that's
100... and you do fall in love quicker.
I'm so glad you said that, because we also have to remember, teenagers fall in love for dumb stuff. I remember falling in love with a guy because his eyes were pretty. That was it.
Aww.
And then summer break happened.
At 15,
came back to
that
school.
Would also make me fall in love.
That's what I'm saying, though. It's like, I will always find eyes attractive. That's one of the first things I'm going to notice. Mm-hmm. But think about it, though. How often did you fall in love with someone, summer break happened, and then by the next school year, you're like, hey, what was I thinking?
Right, like, no, I outgrew them over the summer.
Right, and
like,
it's so weird.
Passed.
It's the out of sight, out of mind thing, which is when we come to the second movie. I will talk about that a lot, but whatever. But that's another thing I feel like about this film, where, again, you can say whatever you want about Kristen Stewart's acting. I at least enjoyed Bella's agency in this film, and I think she loses a lot of agency after this film until you get to the very end where she actually, spoiler alert, has a kid.
Right.
But that's CGI the thing too, Renesmee. Is like, when you get to the end, the beginning of this film, you know she's like, dying in the place of someone I love is a good way to go. You know mm-hmm. what's happening. I love that little intrigue that you know what's going to happen. You just don't know how it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's how the book starts. Mm-hmm.
And I love, if you think about it too, Bella in this book and in this movie, she is trying to save a mass of human beings. Her parents, her boyfriend, his family, her friends. Because she knows they are all potential targets if she doesn't get out of the way.
Yeah. She has a spine in this book, especially. I mean, she has a spine throughout the whole series in the books, but she definitely has a spine in this book. Like, especially after Edward saves her and he's trying to, like, I jokingly use the term gaslight, but he's, like, trying to be like, what are you talking about, Bella? I was standing right next to you.
Right.
And she's like, no, you were across the parking lot. And he's like, no, I was standing right next to you. And she's looking at him like, no, you weren't.
I love that she does not let down.
Me too. Yeah, I love that she doesn't back down from it. And that, like, whenever Edward gives her the cold shoulder and decides to talk to her again, she's like, oh, are we talking today?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's sassy, and she's sassy in the books. And honestly, I thought she could have been sassier, like,
oh, for
more
sure.
spiny in the movie. But I do appreciate that about her character, and I hate that it maybe did not translate into the rest of the movies, because it's still in the books.
I feel that Edward and Bella were played as if they were 30-year-old somethings, you know, too serious, not like teenagers. And yeah, you can argue
the character of Bella is older, but it just it doesn't feel that way when you're reading it. She just feels like a mature. I mean, she's 17 already. So she just feels really mature for a 17-year-old, which I identified with a lot when I was reading this as a teenager, because I had two younger siblings that I was watching out for. I was the oldest. I had a lot on my shoulders with my dad deploying all the time. Like, I felt like I had to endure a lot at 17 that other teenagers didn't have to deal with. So I really love this character. It's interesting you say that, because
you and I both had some tumultuous teenage years.
Right. Had to mature real fast. So yeah, definitely liked and identified with this character's agency and not, she solves her own problems.
Right. And I love that too. I also love, okay, so my favorite scene, you said your favorite scene is the beginning. My favorite scene in this whole film is the gazebo scene, because it is beautiful.
Oh, you mean from like a lighting and production filming perspective?
The whole, at the end? Top to bottom. I enjoy the acting. I can't believe you're, yeah, I know, I said what I said. I enjoy the acting in this scene. I enjoy the lighting. I enjoy the directing. I enjoy everything. Editorial choices, love, love. Music choice, wonderful. The gazebo scene, hands down, best scene. And then you have that little bit at the end where Victoria's watching them. I remember being in the theaters, I was like, love it. So, I would say I think that's one of the reasons I love it, is I am in love with that scene. I think it's beautiful. Again, Katherine Hardwick, you can feel her editorial and directing choices. I love the end of the film.
Because you talked about music.
That's exactly where I was jumping to. Scene. Oh, yeah.
I do want to talk about music, because
I think that's where we have to end off, because both of us love the music in this film. But I think, for me, if we're gonna hard cut on talking about the film and then moving to music, I'd say the best.
There is something I do want to bring up, and then still I do want to talk about makeup and costuming, because it's really important to me. But I do want to talk about music, because it's something we agree on. Is I like the music in this movie.
It's a 10 out of 10. The soundtrack and the score, 10 out of 10. Both of them.
10 out of 10 for you. I will give it a 7.5 out of 10.
Which one, the score or the soundtrack?
The score. The soundtrack is great. Fair. The soundtrack is pretty great. But the score specifically, I don't know if I agree with all of the themes of this soundtrack. Like you said, it does give this movie a very indie vibe, which I don't really think we were ready for in 2008. Stephenie Meyer talked about some of her musical influences when writing Twilight. And one of the biggest ones was Muse. Also Linkin Park, but that's a book Easter egg. But given this musical influence, I will say that Carter Burwell, the composer, who, I don't know, his repertoire is kind of all over the place and not very well known. But honestly, I really think he knocked it out of the park, bringing the feel of Stephenie Meyer's musical influences into the Twilight score. Okay. I know you and I have talked about this before, but think about Muse and their musical style, and then think Twilight soundtrack, and you'll hear it.
They match.
There are delicate strings and piano parts, but also ringing and chugging guitars, like electric guitars, which is part of Muse's whole symphonic techno rock signature. So I gotta give this guy props for taking her writing influence and translating it into the soundtrack. I gotta think that that's gotta probably be Stephenie's favorite part of the series too, is Carter Burwell's score. Because if this is the musical influence for the movie, he nailed it.
Couldn't agree more. Honestly, could not agree more. I mean, we've already talked about how great the score and the soundtrack are, especially the soundtrack. The soundtrack, I love so much, because again, feels like indie music, and they threw it into this indie-like film. Ugh, again, 10 out of 10 choices.
It feels very indie. Yeah.
The only one that sounds less indie is Decode and Linkin Park's... hold on. What is it?
There's a Linkin Park song in this movie.
Leave Out All the Rest? Which one was it part of?
They did Leave Out All the Rest for this series?
Leave Out All the Rest was the first film. I think it comes after the credits, actually. I didn't get through all the credits at the end. Leave Out All the Rest is a very... song? Yes, it's so good.
Well, I'm glad that they did do... I love Leave Out All the Rest.
So good.
It's cute. Which is an interesting book Easter egg, because for book readers, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but when Bella is like prepping for her date the next day, like her first like actual date where she's going to go, I think he's going to take her to the meadow. And she is like trying to go to sleep. She's listening to, I think it's at this point. Anyway, there's this point where Bella's trying to go to sleep in the book and she can't turn her brain off. And Renee's new husband, Phil, boyfriend, Phil?
Boyfriend. Phil.
Are they married? Yeah, they're boyfriend at this point. They marry later. Anyway, Renee's boyfriend, Phil, for Bella's birthday had given her a CD and she hadn't listened to it yet. And so she puts it in her CD player and just plugs headphones in and just listens to the CD on repeat until she's able to finally fall asleep. Somebody eventually asked Stephanie Meyer, what CD is Bella listening to? And it is, I believe, Hybrid Theory by Linkin Park.
It's the first album.
And I'm like, that is an excellent CD to fall asleep
great,
to.
Great album.
She does say, like, in the book, it wasn't her vibe, but by the end of it, she could sing all the choruses, and she didn't hate it.
That's how Linkin Park gets you, man.
In, I think it's Hybrid Theory. Yeah, it's Hybrid Theory. Anyway, in Midnight Sun, we get a conversation where Bella tells, we get the specifics of that conversation where Bella tells Edward what's in her CD player right now, and it's that Linkin Park CD, and he asks her what her favorite song is from that album, and she says, I believe it is Crawling
in my skin.
No, it's not Crawling. It is With You. Yep, it's With You. And he asks her why, and she says she likes the lyrics. Which, if you go look up the lyrics for With You, don't think about the song,
know.
Because the song's really screamy. They are very first love obsessive-y.
Mm-hmm. Again, love that album.
Yeah, it's a great album. So I told you I wanted to talk about makeup and costuming, because they, I think, and I promise we won't end on like a negative note. At least I'll try my bestest not to. but I think what completely kills this movie for me is the makeup and costuming. I think I could get through most of it, but when we, when we first see the Collins, like, nothing is right. Edward says that Alice dresses them in warm, neutral colors to help warm up their skin tone and to, like, play down their paleness and keep them from standing out. She dresses them to help them blend in. And if you look at all of their outfits, that makes Emmett the only one who's dressed correctly.
Yep.
Rosalie looks like she's a model for, like, the Candies Junior Business Professional clothing line from Kohl's from 2008.
What?
She walks into the lunchroom wearing a blazer, a buttoned, like, business professional blazer, business casual blazer, with rhinestone jeans and heels that look like she bought them at Charlotte Russe.
Girl knows, she knows what she likes.
me knowing Book Alice and knowing they shop at places like Chanel, Rosalie would not be caught dead wearing that. So
budget.
They're never wearing warm colors either. Like, okay, fine, budget, sure. But the colors aren't right. They're all wearing grays and dark colors, and whites and grays and dark colors, and it makes them look even paler. And that's not how they're supposed to look. And I think it makes them look awkward. Not to mention,
it's honestly that scene you're talking about where they first walk through the cafeteria. That's one of those scenes where I hate. I cannot stand that scene.
They are supposed to be.
Edward's the only one who walks in slightly normal, but it could be because he's uncomfortable by anyone.
Right, he looks normal. But also, again, they're supposed to be wearing neutral, light colors, right? Edward's wearing black.
I don't even know. Why?
is not right. It's not right. Like, you got so, you have so much source material to work from. Right. You have it laid out for you to bring these characters to life. Why would you choose something different here? Why would you take creative license here the budget. First time you're bringing these characters to life? The budget between buying the color black and the color tan? No. And
that's honestly, since we're talking about costuming and makeup, in comparison to this film, to later films, I actually don't mind their makeup in this film because I feel like they are too pale. Like, to the point of I can't suspend my disbelief. Their eye contrasts with their skin too much. Too crazy for me to get behind in the later films. And that's why I like their look in this film better than I do any of the other ones.
Is it, like, dulled a little bit?
You feel like you have a little bit of tan to them, if you will. But in the other ones, it's just like, you might as well put, oh man, I don't know. I just don't like the makeup use later.
Like
in
that white, like, goth paste you can buy at Hot Topic.
It's almost too much. And that's why I give the makeup in this one a pass, because I feel like their eyes aren't too gold. I feel like their eyes were way too gold later.
Yeah, they look like light brown
awful.
Contacts.
I actually can get behind the gold brown. I think I bought those off brown. Amazon. I know. I love you.
I have a picture. I'll send it to you.
Please do.
It's but from years ago. It's from years and years and years ago, because I was like, I wonder how I would look with vampire eyes. It's funny. Also,
I like
I'm not posting it on the podcast page.
I dare you. but I like the way their eyes looked in this film, but not in later films. But it could be just the contrast of how much paler they look in the other films compared to this one. So I don't know. I can give makeup a pass in this one. I really can't give it a pass in the other ones.
I think there were a couple of problems for me. One of the main ones being that if you look at the makeup for Edward and the makeup for Bella, they're the same. Makeup department did the exact same makeup look on them. They just did a pale wash over her face. I think it's powder, actually. They did a pale powder wash over her face and then did a gentle lavender on her eyelids.
Which looked weird at times.
It looks weird at times, but that's how the vampires are described in the books. They're supposed to be alabaster pale with, like, lavender lids and under eyes, like they haven't had a good night's sleep in years, or maybe they're, like, recovering from having a black eye or a broken nose.
I don't like it.
And I think that having Bella have the exact same aesthetic
some foreshadowing right there
was, and I think it was a poor choice, because yes, I do think it was a little bit too on the nose foreshadowing, because I think that since she spends so much time with Edward in those scenes, that having her, I know she's supposed to be pale, like, you know, they make jokes about it with her coming from Arizona and still being pale or whatever, even that, I think they should have warmed her up a little bit, because even a little bit of color in her skin would have contrasted with Edward's and made him look pale by comparison. So they wouldn't have had to, like,
lean so much into it later.
Makeup.
Yes, 100%.
Mm-hmm. And really, I think the biggest problem coming, because you know I love makeup, and you know
you
I
sure
love
do.
Makeup theory.
You sure do.
I sure do. And... The Collins are supposed to be pale, but they're supposed to be angelically beautiful, right? They got the pale right, but they're all really unnaturally pale. Like, not pleasant to look at pale.
Yes, sickly.
And right! And vampires are supposed to be appealing to humans.
But
especially
later in the films, man. I can pass it in this one, but I cannot pass it later.
I can't even pass it in this one. That's part of my problem, because their paleness, but their beauty is part of their predatory features that draw in prey, their prey being humans. So humans are supposed to find them inherently attractive, but their paleness does not make you intrigued by them in this movie. It's half a casting problem, too, and we didn't talk about casting as much as I definitely could have, but
I'm sure we'll have time in later films.
Time in later. If you cast people who are already naturally tan, you're shooting yourselves in the foot, costuming and makeup-wise, to make them pale while still looking beautiful and natural.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the actors that they cast are all naturally very, like, sun-kissed actors. especially Nikki Reed as Rosalie, she has really golden olive skin. Mm-hmm. And so then you slap pale makeup on her and it's going to look weird. Especially her also having naturally dark hair, and they bleached it for the movie. It doesn't look natural because it's not natural. And so her whole aesthetic looks unnatural and not pleasant. But then with the makeup thing, I think my biggest problems were they tried to like overcompensate for the paleness with things like putting heavy eye makeup and lashes on Rosalie, which they're not. Again, they're supposed to be naturally beautiful, so they should have gone with a natural makeup look. And instead they went like with false lashes and heavy eyeliner for Rosalie. And that's just not right. And it makes her look more unnaturally pale. And the thing that I can't get over is that they left all of their lips red.
Yeah.
That
can't really that have I think that is
the
thing
that bothers me the most. Yes! Thank you! Thank you, thank you, thank you. That is the thing that bothers me the most. If you want to showcase paleness and get the point of paleness across, having intensely colored lips completely detracts from it. They are essentially corpses, right? They're supposed to be bloodless. Why are their lips red?
Probably because Alice was like, we gotta blend in.
We gotta blend in, y'all. Let's wear MAC lipstick. I've got it.
You said you didn't went in on a bad note, so how do you went in on a good note?
I don't know, man. How do you want to end?
I rate this film B-.
B-, that's generous.
I found a lot more to like about it than you did. I think for me it's because I look at it more specifically as a film and not comparative to the books, because then I'll just get pissed. Mm-hmm. Whereas, yeah. I mean, and that's a lot of things with like the Harry Potter movies too, is if I can disconnect how much I love the book versus what comes across on as a film, I can reserve some of those worst grades and be like, okay, these are the things that work as a film. Not everything's going to work. But I give enough things that work for me, and only me. I can't speak for everyone else, but for me.
And only me.
This comes out as a B-. It's one of those films I can rewatch, but not really the other ones.
I think if I'm going to try to end on a fun, interesting note, or a happy note, you know, whatever. As I was watching this movie, I noticed little, like, Easter eggs that were, like, I think supposed to be symbolic throughout the movie. And now I want to go back and watch it again and look for all of them, because there's a lot. And I'm not just talking about like the dorky apple scene where Bella knocks over an apple and Edward kicks it into his hands like the cover of the book.
Cheesy. But I don't hate it.
But there's other things like that. I want to call them Easter eggs like that all throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. I sent one to my sister this morning. I paused on them in that cafeteria scene when they're all sitting at the table, and I looked at their plates. Do you know what's on their plates, Cherie?
What?
Veggies, because they're vegetarian vampires.
Ha, you right.
I kid you not. Like, I dare you. Pause on the cafeteria scene and zoom in on their plates. They've got, like, carrots and celery. Love and it. Rosalie's eating an apple.
Love it.
And there's stuff like that all throughout the movie.
I'm going to say this again. This movie is all the better because of Catherine Hardwicke, the director.
I mean, some of these land. Some of these are just too, like, cliche and tropey, and, like, they're too on the nose. Like, there's one, like, in the biology room, and you pan to Edward's character. What's behind him?
The owl. The wings. Like an angel.
But
I highly recommend people go and watch the there is a, oh my gosh, what do you call that? Not a directorial cut, man.
Not a what, behind the scenes, like the commentary?
The commentary, thank you. The commentary with Catherine Hardwicke and Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson is actually a really fun way to watch this film. You learn a lot. If you can find that somewhere, I'd watch it. It's actually a really fun watch. But
interesting.
I said I'm a lot, and I am so sorry. I'm gonna cut many of those out as possible.
The other, I wanted to point out, like, yes, Angelic Shore, where my brain went was an owl is a bird of prey.
Ooh.
And Edward is supposed to be a predator. Like, he's supposed to eat people. So it's supposed to be signifying that, like, Bella is about to be in prey.
The director would argue otherwise. You should go listen to her talk about that.
It's interesting. One of the ones that I
hold on. This got to be the last one because I have
that's
to.
That's fine. I told you I was gonna end on something fun. Okay. So, and I promise I will.
Love it.
So the one that I did like that was like symbolism, maybe a little bit too on the nose, but this one was fun because I've always loved Jasper's character. I love his character. His character does not get done enough justice until much
his
later in the series.
Has a very interesting backstory.
He has a very interesting backstory because it is a crappy backstory. It's unpleasant. And so he was in the military, right? He fought in the Civil War. And when we first see his character and they're coming into the cafeteria, and I was talking about costuming, at least Jasper is wearing white. I guess it's supposed to dumb down his paleness, but they have the contrast turned way up, so it's blindingly white. But the jacket that he's wearing is a military field jacket.
Love.
Right? I'm like, okay, I appreciate that costuming choice. That feels like it's gotta be intentional. And I actually loved that one because I love Jasper's character so much.
Again, this movie is made all the better because Catherine Hardwick.
Period. they tried. They did not always land, and I feel like that's just because of the tone of the film. Sometimes they came off as cheesy, but there were ones like Jasper's jacket that I'm like, you know what? I see you, costuming department, and I approve of that decision. That was great.
I love it.
Okay. Well, we got to wrap because we could talk. I have so many more notes on this. Please consider subscribing to our Patreon because I'll be posting these notes on our Patreon. And you can get access to them for the low price of a cup of coffee for a month. A whole month for a cup of coffee. And you can get my Twilight notes. So all the things that I did not get to talk about and all the things that drive me crazy about this movie, you can have access to them on our Patreon. Next week, we have not 100% decided, but we will be dipping our toes into the area of documentaries. A lot of you have requested we get our... What is the word I'm looking for here? Opinions? Commentary? Analysis?
Yeah.
Yeah, all of those. A lot of you have requested our analysis on a documentary. So we will be deciding which one we're going to be doing this week. But rest assured, you will get some real world content from us next week. So be here next Friday to tune in. Roll credits. Cinematic Pulse is edited and produced by Cherie Jackson. The episodes and theme are written and performed by yours truly. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and you can find Cinematic Pulse on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Please consider supporting us by becoming a member of our Patreon, where you can get access to show notes, vote on our upcoming episodes, and get exclusive downloads of our episode art. Thank you so much for listening, because we just checked your Cinematic Pulse.